This is a career channel program from UC San Diego Extension. Visit us at uctv.tv/careers for videos, employment news, and trend articles to help recent college graduates and those in career transition bridge to better employment.
So honestly, I'm deeply grateful and humbled to be here today to have the opportunity to present to you some experiences. You know, the future of work, it's a relative perspective. I'm bringing to you a lens of experience, partially delving in from education, a lot of consulting work, parenting, mentoring, teaching, and more importantly, learning from everyone. And I love learning from others. It's really a blessing to have that opportunity. So in terms of the future of work, I'm going to add something to it that's not listed here in terms of experiences. I got a chance to audition as a tenor with the Montreal West Operatic Society. I got a part as a tenor. I sang the song Edelweiss from The Sound of Music, but more importantly, and I encourage you to Google this, there's a theater called Haskell, where the stage, I believe, is in Canada, but the audience is in the United States. So when you get a chance, Google Haskell in Vermont. It's a theater. It's really cool, and it's something that I had experienced since. Completely unrelated, but something fun to think about. So adapt and elevate. We're going to cover the purpose of your education, continuous improvement, time zone agnostic elements, embracing disruption, how it's permanent, no retirement age, and I'll offer up some fun examples, portfolios of revenue. Take a look at our jobs and what that looks like now and going forward, what that could be conceived as portfolios of revenue, kind of cheating from what companies have done like Apple and others. And what does the 2030, 2040, and 2050 look like? What do they look like? And we're going to bring it all home. And if you want, raise your hands. Would love for this to be interactive. I know it's supposed to be a keynote, but I want it to be fun for you as well. So if things pop into your head and you want to ask and raise your hand, please do so, and we could interact and learn from each other along the way. Is that cool?
Yes.
Yes, awesome. And again, thank you so much, all of you, for being here. So purpose of your education. I'm kind of a strong proponent of it, having gotten it, developed it, and built it up over time. You know, the future of work is founded in the response and the purpose of your education. So think about that. So when I started studying electrical engineering, I wanted to do it because I wanted to design audio products and loudspeakers. And when I started my PhD, I waited 6 months before I really had a good handle, a good understanding of what I wanted to do. And more importantly, how it's going to be in service to me. Because at the end of the day, your education has to be in service to you, not the other way around, in a healthy way. There's nothing negative about that. And so, you know, navigating your career requires discipline, curiosity, and grit. And you know, if we're swayed by adversity, that happens, that's normal. We're swayed by uncertainty and apprehension, but I would encourage us all going forward to elevate those thresholds as we navigate the balance of our careers and our lives. You know, maintaining our resolve and the purpose of our education keeps us prepared for the future of work. And I really firmly believe that your motivation to complete your education is a source of truth for you, and it has meaning and value to you. So keep that in mind. Please consider those things when you're navigating the balance of your careers. Continuous improvement. What a wonderful commitment. You know, continuous improvement, the future of work, it's really spawns off in a thought process, a mindset. You know, how do you want to navigate those things? What does that mean to you? There's three fundamental moving parts that I believe that are really relevant to the continuous improvement going forward. Skills, and that comes from the purpose of your education. Emotional intelligence, EQ. And then lastly, something that's kind of overlooked in the workplace is our behavior. How does our behavior scale into different venues? So what I'll offer here, this phrase on the bottom here, I really firmly believe, and I've seen this in the workplace, I've seen this in my experience consulting. You know, employers have a right to ask you to change your behavior, but they don't have a right to ask to change who you are. So be true to yourself, but kind of when you get a chance, be sensitive to how to behave in the workplace. And I'm learning, I'm always trying to improve my skills and my behavior so I can play well in the sandbox. So be mindful, and it's something that we could take from one job to another. Our behavior, it's so basic and so simple, and sometimes we overlook it. Our capacity to say hello to each other, our capacity to interact with each other, it's an important thing. And even maybe more so in how we're working internationally or we're working remotely. And it's really important because we don't always get a chance to kind of interact with somebody face-to-face. And so we have to figure out how to connect and reach out to people through Zoom, through Teams, through the phone. Those are important skills to kind of finesse, and there's always an opportunity to kind of fine-tune it. And I try to do that every day when I'm interacting with people in the workplace and all that stuff. So, you know, the future of work requires preparation supported by a commitment to continuous improvement. It's not a light load. It's kind of a heavy load, but it's an opportunity for us to develop some muscle memory. And so when those things become a reflex, and we're doing that in the workplace, it makes it more fun for us, and it actually adds more value to the people that you're kind of working with. You know, these skills include refined from the purpose of your education. And again, the continuous improvement is really benefits from keeping a critical eye on ourselves and a commitment to ourselves to really fine-tune how we behave with others. And so our value in the workplace, once you've been vetted for all your hard skills, comes from our capacity, again, to play in the sandbox, to work well with others. Very important. These soft skills are increasingly hard, and it's even more important for the future of work because the competitive landscape is really something. It's a really unique animal going forward. You work with international people. The concept of cultural intelligence is something that people are kind of gunning for and being open to and mindful of. And the competitive landscape is forever broadening. And so there are work modalities, hybrid, on-site, remote, all of these things are really important to consider. And that's where our capacity to connect and interact with others really adds value. And candidly, when you're kind of playing well in the sandbox, I promise you, the workday is a lot more fulfilling and a lot more fun. So that's value to you. That's a benefit to you. And again, our capacity to adapt to the diversity of employer offerings, it's critical for the success of the future of work. And then future-proof your career by proactively double-downing on your standout strengths and your soft skills. And again, it's just a good investment for yourself. Time zone agnostic. Yes, sir.
So I've heard from students when in conversations about soft skills. It's great to say you need to really boost your soft skills. How do you do that? What's the advice to students to say, how do you get them? What are they?
You gave me chills. And this, by the way, was not a planted question. I'm glad you asked that question. One concept that I tossed out, you know, a while back when I was working with Asana at another place is every interaction we have is an opportunity for us to elevate our brand. And so I say, tell people, don't squander the opportunity to interact in a rich way, in a meaningful way. And every opportunity that we have, me interacting with you right now, it's my obligation to elevate my brand and to offer value to you. So I encourage students, embrace that opportunity when you're interacting with different people in different modalities, in different points in your life. You go off to buy something. And I'm always asked, how are you doing today? And I say, I'm grateful or I'm happy. But that's the way I want my brand to be perceived because I really do believe I am grateful and I am happy, but I choose to be happy. So those are convictions that come in part from our core values. So I tell students, reach into your core values, champion your own brand, but don't squander opportunities to elevate and to communicate what you can bring to the table going forward. Now, it's not an easy lift. It takes time to refine. But if psychologically we make that commitment, it becomes an easier load. And we develop that muscle memory gently over time. But that's a fantastic question. Have I answered your question,
sir?
Yeah. My pleasure. You're welcome. Any other questions? Any thoughts? Please.
How would you define emotional intelligence and how can one basically strengthen their emotional intelligence?
So how would you define emotional intelligence for our EV guys in the background here? It's a sensitivity. It's a self-awareness. It's a mindset. It's all of those moving parts. In the strictest definition, it's really self-awareness, being aware of how we interact. So when I'm speaking to you, I'm trying my best to apply emotional intelligence. I stand square. I dedicate all of my attention to you, so I'm captivated by you, and we're connecting in the moment. So those are some of the building blocks. Being mindful, being an active listener is a great exercise and an application of emotional intelligence, and it shouldn't be underestimated. I'll share this with you, true story. I befriended a homeless woman. She's in her 30s, extremely charismatic, very funny. It was a failure on my part with my emotional intelligence and how this kind of played out, but it eventually came out okay. She asked me for 50 cents. She was living, she was a homeless person. She was asking me for 50 cents. I gave her $5. And she screamed, she hollered at me. She says, I don't need $5, I need 50 cents. And I failed, my emotional intelligence failed me because she said, I need 50 cents because I need to call the pound. I lost my dog. So being self-aware, being aware, being in the moment, connecting, dividing all your attention, not being distracted by text messages, you know, with our phones and things like that. Those are all soft skills that represent a respect for that individual and that engagement, that commitment to being in the moment and being part of that path. Those are all building blocks that help with emotional intelligence. It's a fantastic question. Nobody's ever asked me that, you know, in a kind of a public setting. That's a good thing. Being sensitive to the needs of others and listening. All of those moving parts add to the value of what emotional intelligence can be displayed and projected on others. So time zone agnostic. You know, the concept of all of that stuff not so much lies in the physical time zones, but in the concept of what that looks like. So here we got a wonderful, glorious map of, you know, the world and the different time zones spread across. But I think more importantly, it really represents opportunities for us to kind of either play in the sandbox, connect with people professionally, interpersonally. But when considering the United States, we have primarily, you know, largely three time zones, west, central, and east. And so a lot of jobs or a lot of opportunities are posted with a type of sensitivity or requirement to be mindful and to work in this time zone. But I think going forward, all of those kind of delineations are going to be stripped away, and it'll be expected that you'll be working with somebody in India. It'll be expected you'll be working with somebody in China. That's not nothing negative. So currently now, I'm managing a lot of software development, and I have early morning stand-up meetings at 6:30 in the morning or 7:30 in the morning, and I have developers in India that are coming on board because it's in the evening for them, but they're willing to put in their time to connect with us and help us develop platforms and web applications going forward. I've been in situations where I've worked with stakeholders in New Zealand and Australia, in the UK and Europe. It's kind of the norm in a lot of the technical development because of the not the disparity, but the distribution of talent across the globe. And so, you know, going forward, the future of work, not unlike today, it's not going to really scale that much, but the expectation will be normal. It'll be normal to expect to work with somebody in any time zone. But that also means it'll give us the freedom to a degree, you know, if you look at it the opposite way, it'll give us the freedom to work asynchronously. And when I say that, that means you can do one part of the job now, head out, get some grocery, do some laundry, come back and continue your job because you're working with different parts of the people, different parts of the globe. When I worked at Ingram Micro, I worked with product managers, which were different parts of the globe. So I would load up my team's chat, kind of like Slack. I would load up my team's chat with updates for them. Hey, I updated your dashboard, blah, blah, blah. Or if I had questions, I'd load up the questions up in my teams, and I'd go off, drive home, and then come back in the morning, and I'd have all of my team's chat kind of filled up with answers. And so that's the way I tried to work asynchronously and working with people from different time zones. And so, you know, the future of work is here. You know, it's here. We're living it now. But the norms and the expectations are going to be amplified further. And so, you know, be prepared. Embrace it. And, you know, we're going to have the future of work like today. It's going to continue. We'll have 24-hour support, development, and production for customers throughout the globe. Does that mean we're not going to sleep? We're not going to eat? Heck no. We're still going to do all those things that we need to do. And maybe we'll even find slivers of time that we can develop and dedicate to ourselves because of that freedom of other people doing other things for us or with us 24/7. So we can make it what we want to. You know, embrace disruption. It's permanent. It seems ironic and it seems contradictory, and you're saying, well, what the heck is he talking about? Hang on. I'll offer up that, you know, AI is here. It's permanent, but it needs to be in service to people. What are your thoughts? Any thoughts, or what are your thoughts when you hear artificial intelligence, AI? What comes to mind? Is it a little bit scary? Is it a little bit intimidating? Is it something you embrace? Anyone? First impressions, please.
It's like a tool that, if used correctly, can basically help people a lot. But again, if used incorrectly, it can lead to like dangerous consequences. So we need to like basically educate people to like learn how to use AI correctly for the service of society.
Nailed it. And if you want, you could come do this part of the presentation if you're cool with that. You nailed it. You nailed it. It really is a tool. Ultimately, it really is ultimately a tool. And so my background is electrical engineering, so I love to tinker and all this other stuff. But I'm actually skeptical sometimes, not cynical, but I'm actually skeptical about the validity and the reliability and the trustworthiness of technology, especially when it's right out of the gate. And for me, AI is no different. Artificial intelligence is no different. It has to be in service to people. It has to be a tool. We must use technology so that it doesn't enslave us in the process. But at the same time, it is uneasy, and it could add some concern, and it causes us to be a little bit skeptical and afraid. But we got to understand the utility of the technology. You got to embrace it with innate cyclical nature and work less and less in silos. Now, the AI of today, it shall be displaced with more disruptive technology tomorrow. How many of us remember 2K? It was going to be huge, right? It was going to be huge. It was going to tear the world apart. It was the apocalypse. We're all guaranteed. We lived through it. We survived, right? Arguably, parenting might be as challenging and super disruptive, right? I've got a daughter. That's really disruptive. I'm learning from her. AI is no different. How about the internet? When we flipped the breaker and we turned on the internet, were we concerned? It was a little bit intimidating, right? Agreed? And now what? We can't live without it, myself included. I'm a slave to the internet. But here's a couple of fun examples. Facebook, a few years back, I want to say 2017-ish, they set up these two chatbots to negotiate with each other. And so off they went, and they did. But they started doing it in their own shorthand to a point where the actual researchers just didn't understand what the heck they were saying to each other. So this AI application, one application was talking to another, and ultimately, as human beings, we didn't understand what the heck they were saying to each other. Kind of spooky and scary. The temptation was to turn off the application, but instead what they did, they nudged AI, and they asked AI to start talking in simple English. So then they started to talk in simple English, and all of a sudden they came back from the abyss, and the researchers were comfortable with what this application was doing, and it was doing what it was meant to do. I was recently with another client, and strongly encouraged the software developers to install ChatGPT and Copilot. And even with the training that Microsoft was doing, you know, in their videos and all that stuff, they tried to do an application, they tried to implement AI in real time, and they said, okay, they put in some suggestions for the AI to develop software code, and it kind of messed up and didn't do such a great job. So to your point, it was a tool for them, but they even said it. The experts at Microsoft said, we had to nudge AI, and they did it in real time. We nudged AI so that it could find a better solution. And so ultimately, it's got to be in service to us. It has to be in service to us. Not unlike technology before us. And again, I am convinced that the AI of today shall be displaced by something more daunting and more difficult or different going forward. So, no retirement age. I believe that the concept of retirement in the future of work, it's not going to exist. I've experienced it already. When I was a director of education, sadly met up with my former boss, Hassan, and I know him. He, quote, had retired. And then I asked him, how you been? What are you doing? And he said, you know what? I've got a lot to give. And he got antsy in his, quote, in his retirement. And so I brought him on board, and he taught finance to nursing students online. And he crushed it. He had a wonderful time. He crushed it. And he was, quote, retired. And thank you, sir, for joining us. And he was the epitome of what that looks like going forward. So, you know, there are extreme examples. We have millionaires and billionaires that just don't know how to stop, like the Warren Buffetts, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates. They still do their thing. But I love offering this example of Dr. Sidney Harman, who at the age of 86, he was the founder of Harman Kardon, but at the age of 86, he would drive up from his home in Malibu with a stick shift convertible Porsche, 911 Porsche. And it's not that it was all about money, but it was inspiring to see that this fellow just never settled. And at the age of 91, he bought the magazine Newsweek, and completely unscheduled, at the age of 92, the poor fellow passed away. But he never stopped working. He was always engaged. He never retired. And so I really believe that going forward, pathways are going to include side hustles as the norm, and then the context of retirement shall be more and more on our own terms. So interestingly, I do believe there's going to be some stigmas that are going to be stripped away by employers. So they see an additional slice of a workforce that's being underutilized. There could be mentoring, there could be shadowing others, or there could be used as powerful conduits to help strengthen employers as they see fit now. But there's a little bit of a stigma that needs to be kind of debunked before we get there. Portfolios of revenue. This concept is not unlike what Apple and others do, but I believe that our portfolios of revenue are what our jobs should be. So, for example, we have an opportunity going forward to no longer look at jobs as jobs, but as lanes of revenue, as portfolios of revenue. Not unlike these swim lanes. You know, the portfolios of revenue are analogous to swim lanes on an international footprint. I'll give you a fun example. You could look at one slice, one portfolio of revenue covering paying your bills, bread and butter. That's one lane. Another lane could be something that is passive income. We figure out how to get that done somewhere in the future. That's part of the future of work, the strategy. And the last lane, one of the additional third lanes, could be something that you pursue as a passion project. It could be something that could be deferred compensation somewhere down the road, but something you've been thinking about. Oh, I'm going to write a book. which I'm trying to do. You know, and so that for me is another portfolio of revenue. It's going to be fulfilling. It's going to be exciting. But I really encourage us to stop looking at jobs as an obligation of some sort, but to be in service to you, to be in service to your strategy, and consider them as portfolios of revenue. And I'm not super clever. You know, companies like Apple, they have soft goods, they have hard goods, they have lots of different swim lanes where they generate a lot of money, even with their direct products. Amazon is another great example, Amazon Web Services. I've used them for my clients to load stuff and to store stuff and to back up stuff on the cloud. But Amazon, I'm addicted to Amazon. I do a lot of shopping online. So, you know, Amazon is a very complex and very clever company in how they've actually expanded their business over time. So let us embrace and lift some of these concepts and make them be helpful to us, all right? So think about, again, these opportunities. And I would encourage you to consider three lanes. The lane that pays your bills, bread and butter, which I try to do. A second lane where it, over time it provides a source of passive income. And maybe it pays for a vacation here and there. It doesn't have to be huge, lofty things, but things that really change the mindset and how we see and we leverage employers for us. And we don't enslave ourselves to what they need. Not that I'm contrarian, but I really want us to kind of unshackle what the future of work looks like for us, because there are lots of healthy, rich options for us out there. And then lastly, again, think of what could be deferred compensation. Maybe it starts off with volunteering. You volunteer with some organization, but it provides a huge network of people that you interact with. And then that could be a stepping stone for another lane, another portfolio of revenue. So what do 2030, 2040, and 2050 look like? All right, so here are some things, but I'm going to pop up some things. We go down the list in 2030. It's really soon. It's not that far away. It's only 6-odd years away from us, so it's going to be around the corner. But think about, you know, the positive and the inclusive cultures in the workplace, the new balance of power in the workplace, work modalities, hybrid, on-site, remote, all those things, you know, they're right at our fingertips, more and more prolific. High cultural intelligence. Let's go gunning for that as we play in a broader and bigger sandbox on an international footprint. Be sensitive to how other cultures interact and talk, and what's insignificant for us could be something really significant for another person in different parts of the globe. So those are things that are not so much up and coming, but being fine-tuned and asked of us as candidates and people that are engaged in that future of work. And then in 2040, here's a fun one. Check this out. We've got metaverse architects. We've got already Apple that has thrown out their Oculus headsets. Online and local entrepreneurs, cybersecurity and misinformation mavens. So it's a mess out there. It's a jungle out there. So there are people that are going to be relegated and kind of fine-tuning that misinformation that's out there. And over here, down the last one in 2040, healthcare professionals and biohackers. So it's anticipated that people with a net worth of $10 million or more during the 2040s are going to have the option to grow and age until the age of 130 years old. Now, I don't know what that looks like. I don't know if that's going to be a good thing or a bad thing. But there are people predicting that that could be an option somewhere in the future. Very aggressive, a little bit spooky at the same time. I don't know what the quality of life would be like, and so on. So these are things to think about. And then in 2050, we've got biotechnology, healthcare, virtual and augmented reality, and then we've got space tourism, the colonization of other planets or the colonization of other neighborhoods. That could be on the radar somewhere in the 2050s. So bringing it home, you know, the purpose of your education, it's got to be in service to you. It's a business card for you going forward. It's your source of truth. Figure out what you want to do with it before you pull the trigger and engage on it. And if you don't have it 100% figured out, ask yourself this question: what am I going to do with my education 2 years and 5 years after I graduate? How's it going to be in service to me in my career 2 years and 5 years after I graduate? Continuous improvement, skills, emotional intelligence that we covered really well, and then behaviors. Keep an eye on behaviors and what that could look like for different employers, and tune your behavior. Stick to your core values, your motivation and your core values, but be mindful and sensitive to what your behavior can impact your lane, your portfolio of revenue in a constructive, healthy way. You know, embrace time zone agnostic, working internationally on many different footprints, many different time zones, working asynchronously, making sure that we leverage that to our advantage and stitch in a quality of life that serves us. Embrace disruption as permanent. artificial intelligence is going to be something more disruptive tomorrow. Be mindful and figure out how that's always in service and that it's a tool along the way. That's very important. It's a tool. I don't perceive that we're actually going to retire. The concept of retirement age is going to kind of go away. Portfolios of revenue, I couldn't stress that enough. Keep an eye on what that looks like. And what do 2030, 40, and 50 look like? Let's take a fun stab at that. I would encourage you to start today. Start sculpting what your roadmap in 2030 is going to look like. High cultural intelligence, keep an eye on that and make sure that it's in service to you. You know, in preparation for 2040, that's a way off. Build the muscle memory, develop those skills, focus on that emotional intelligence and how that's in service to you, and fine-tune again, I'm stressing it again, the behaviors that we bring to the workplace and what that can offer value. And if I could take a stab and be whimsical, you know, in 2050, take a look at space tourism. I have no affiliations with it, but it's certainly piqued my curiosity. And with that, I thank you so much. Thank you so much for being here. I'm really grateful for this opportunity. Thank you, UC San Diego.